Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is having an awesome December. I hope y'all aren't too stressed out by the holidays, or maybe they're even over by the time this is coming out. But I'm super excited because I'm having my first ever returning guest, and I'm joined by horror writer Brian McCauley, whose new book, Candy Cane Kills, which was just released in November, and I read it and it was great. So welcome back, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me. I didn't know I was the first ever returning guest. What a treat that is.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be chatting about Candy Cane Kills. It was a quick read, but it was so much fun and so much heart. You're teaching now. You teach film at ASU, right?
Yeah, so just moved a few months ago to ASU to start teaching full time. I had been teaching in LA and have been working as a film and TV writer and then novelist and kind of all of it combined. And getting to teach all of that now has been such a joy, and to keep writing as well on the side, of course, and just kind of bring that experience into the classroom. It's been really great.
Amazing. Are you incorporating any horror into your teaching?
Oh yeah, I can't help it. We did a lesson where I had them, we did a table read of the opening sequence of the screenplay for Scream, and then we watched the opening sequence. And many of them, like half of the class, had never seen the original Scream before.
My
So
goodness.
it's pretty wild that their first exposure was like, we're going to read the screenplay pages and then watch it. And they had so much fun doing the reading. And, it was lots of laughter and joy. And then when we watched the actual sequence that was like dead silence, they were like, that was really scary. It was like, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, bless their hearts, having never seen the opening to Scream before.
I know. I was like, I started the class with raise your hand if you've seen the movie Scream. And then I realized I was like, I have to specify 1996 Scream because there are now two movies named Scream.
My goodness. Oh, well, that's so much fun. So, like I said, I read Candy Cane Kills last week and I really had a lot of fun reading it. There was a lot of heart and not too much gore, which I personally always appreciate. There was a little, but not too much. It wasn't like reading American Psycho. And a lot of turns that I didn't see coming. So, where did the idea come from for Candy Cane Kills?
Yeah, so I was approached by Shortwave Publishing. I had sold a short story to Shortwave Magazine, and the editor there, Alan Mustupka, said, "Hey, I'm just starting this concept called Killer VHS, and it's going to be a series of novellas. The vibe is kind of like Goosebumps for grown-ups. Do you have?" And it all has to be harkening back to those like 80s VHS covers that we all used to see growing up at Blockbuster and local video stores. And every story has to incorporate some kind of found footage element. Like, does that appeal to you to pitch an idea?" And I was like, 100% yes. And the second thing he said was, if you do it, yours will be the second in the series. It'll probably come out November, December." And then immediately my brain was like, "Can I do like a holiday themed horror story?" And he was like, "Yeah, what did you have in mind?" And I had nothing in mind except that I knew that that was an arena that I loved and wanted to play in. And the first thing that came to mind was the name Candy Cane, Cain. And I Googled and I was like, okay, nobody's done that before. And it just felt like such an obvious fit of the kind of biblical story combined with, the Christmas treat. And so I was like, okay, if I have a slasher named Candy Cane, what's the legend there? And how can I build the story from there? And that was the kicking off point, really.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love the incorporation of the VHS tapes. That was super cool.
Yeah, it was fun to write like found footage in a horror fiction format where, it's a book that has a lot of different character perspectives. But once I got to the footage chapters, I was like, all right, this has to be kind of cold and clinical because it's just watching what unfolds with no character perspective.
Yeah, it was super. Super creepy to read about like what they were watching, which no spoilers, but
Yeah.
yeah. And I was just thinking of it. There's more than one villain in this. I don't want to go too much into it, but there's the people who own the Airbnb, and then there's Candy Cane. So that was interesting
Yes.
too.
Yeah,
So.
that was a big thing I wanted to explore with like, the naughty and nice, the good and evil of it all, was to really blur those lines and explore the gray areas of like, okay, well, what makes a monster kind of thing. Like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley will always be my biggest favorite book, biggest influence, and so kind of sympathy for the quote unquote monster will always be the thing that I'm interested in exploring.
Yeah. Oh, so any Final Boys that inspired your main character of Austin?
Oh, great question. So, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, which is a big Final Boy story. And yeah, that was, for me, it was like a matter of, okay, I know they're the teen characters are going to be the focus of this story. And then my second thought was, do I want to make it a modern story? Or if I'm exploring teen characters, what if I set it in 2005 when I'm the age of the Austin teenage boy character? And that just fits so clearly. I was like, that makes sense. And then when I researched 2005 and saw that Brokeback Mountain came out in December of 2005, I was like, okay, well then clearly that's the answer here. And it just kind of really informed, the focus of that character's arc.
That's super cool. Did you have a group of friends like this growing up?
Yeah, there was definitely, it was fun to kind of reference, different characters from my high school days, different moments. Like there was a kind of like infamous Captain Morgan's night amongst my friend group that had a very different context and outcome, but it was like we snuck a bottle of Captain Morgan's. We were in a basement, just like drinking and like reckoning with a lot of teen drama. And I was like, I just have to like it just there's a specificity there that just feels to like it resonates.
Oh, that's cool. It didn't end in like a serial killer coming after
Yeah,
you.
gratefully that part hasn't happened yet, but could always be in I Know What You Did Last Summer kind of could come back to get us someday.
A very cool Easter egg that you put in this book is that Candy Cane Kills takes place in the same universe as your first book, Curse of the Reaper. And they even mentioned the series. Did you know when you started writing that you would do that?
I did not. It actually, as I mentioned, like why I decided to set it in 2005 was like connected to the characters and the teen element. And then as soon as I made that decision, I was like, oh, I forgot that Curse of the Reaper is also set in 2005 for totally different reasons, because I was tackling, the remake craze that was just starting around that time. And then, yeah, one of the characters is noted early in the story as like always dragging them to B horror movies. And I was like, what if he references the Reaper franchise? Like, that just seems kind of organic to like throw it in as an Easter egg.
That was super cool. So I got, without saying too much, I got slight barbarian vibes from Candy
Oh,
Cane
yeah.
Kills. Was that on purpose? Did you see Barbarian before you started writing this or after or?
Yeah, I do think Barbarian was an inspiration in many ways. And just I saw it in a crowded theater, and the fun and the joy of the kind of unexpected turns of that movie. And I actually went with a friend of a friend who I didn't really know that well yet, and I wasn't sure how into horror he was, but he's like, oh yeah, I'd heard good things about it, like sure, let's go see it, because there was a screening at the Writers Guild Theater. And afterward, he turned to me and was like, what the fuck, man? I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was going to be that insane. But it really was inspiring to see the way that an audience reacted to that type of kind of bonkers story. And it was like, okay, cool. So we can keep pushing that and go to those places. So yeah, it was definitely an influence for sure.
Nice. Did any holiday horror movies provide inspiration for like the vibe or the feel that you're going for, or any holiday horror books? I'm not sure if there really are any many others, but
Good question. I mean, I think, it's like the original Black Christmas, certainly a huge reference point as well. And the early aughts remake, Black Xmas, I think is what it's traditionally known as because of the poster. And I love there's a French film called Inside it is a really intense, and it's set on Christmas Eve, and it has a sort of home invasion vibe, and it's just like relentless, nonstop. And that the sort of pacing of that movie was a big influence. They're like, okay, I want it to feel like once things kick off, there's just kind of no reprieve. It's just going to be kind of constant.
Yeah, definitely. So, since this takes place in 2005, what is your favorite early 2000s remake?
Oh, good question. Favorite. So the Hills Have Eyes remake, I thought was really way better than the first one. I actually feel similarly about Last House on the Left. Like, I'm like Wes Craven, huge influence, love his work so much in terms of like Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream. But both the original Last House on the Left and the original Hills Have Eyes, I'm not huge fans on. And I think both of those remakes were definitely improvements on the original.
Okay, good to know. I haven't seen either The Hills Have Eyes yet, but I have only seen the remake of The Last House on the Left. My friend and I didn't know what we were getting into about 10 years ago on July 4th.
Oh boy.
We were like, we'll just watch this one. I mean, it's a hard, how bad can it be?
Yeah, if you don't know what you're getting into, it's not going to be a pleasant experience, but it's definitely an improvement upon the original. But yeah, the Hills Have Eyes is Alexandra Aja?
Aja.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has that French, as similar to Inside, it has the kind of French extremity to it. But yeah.
Yeah. I still haven't seen Inside, so I have to watch that.
Yep. Just queue it up on Christmas Eve and good luck.
Yeah, it'll be my Christmas morning movie with my parents. I'll be like, it's about a family being inside together. So.
Not to be confused with the Bo Burnham special. It's a totally different vibe.
Oh my God. Oh, I need to rewatch that at some point. I love that. I have that on my iTunes or Apple Music or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations for other holiday horror books that listeners can read after they read Candy Cane Kills? They're still hungry for that.
Ooh, so for books, Brian Asman wrote a book called Night of the Living Elves, and it is a, or it might be Return of the Living Elves, because it is very much a throwback to Return of the Living Dead.
Oh.
And it's a novella. It's just really campy and fun. Yeah, that's a great one. And then Angela Sylvain wrote Frostbite that just came out this year. And that is a 90s, set in the 90s in the Dakotas. And it's like sci-fi creature feature horror with like snowy vibes. That one's super fun. Highly recommend that.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look those up. Do you ever want to write another holiday horror book?
Yeah, it is. It is a really fun vibe to play in. And now I'm kind of, you know, looking at the calendar of like, what are the other holidays? Because, you know, Eli Roth has now already staked his claim in Thanksgiving. But yeah, there's something really fun about finding a day that is traditionally like a celebratory day and seeing like, all right, how can you plug some horror into this? Like, I know what you did last summer, capture some of those 4th of July vibes really well. So yeah, I may be looking at the calendar or maybe returning to Christmas. We'll see.
So I hope everyone goes and checks out Candy Cane Kills. Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we get into just holiday horror movies in general about Candy Cane Kills?
I don't think so, other than just that a lot of folks are saying that they read it in one sitting. So if that's something you're into, it's less than 150 pages and the pacing tends to pull people through the whole thing in one sitting. So short read. So if it sounds up your alley, I hope you check it out.
Awesome. We'll leave links in the show notes to where you can get it. So let's talk about holiday horror movies in general now, if that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your like top three favorite holiday horror movies?
Oh, I mean, probably the original Black Christmas, as I mentioned. I'm actually going to a screening tomorrow night. I'm so excited. There's a theater here called The Majestic in Tempe, Arizona, and there's a screening series called Cinematary, and they do like monthly horror movie screenings. So for example, on the most recent Friday the 13th, I went to a sold out screening of Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, and it was so much fun to see it with a full crowd on the big screen. So tomorrow night, I have tickets to a sold out Black Christmas screening, and we're doing a donation drive for local charities of toys and clothes and everything, and a raffle that I'm going to put Candy Cane Kills in. So I'm really excited because I haven't revisited Black Christmas, the original one, in quite some time. But it really, when I first saw it, I was like, oh man, it predates Halloween and it does a lot of that stuff before Halloween. Yeah, Inside is a big one, as I mentioned. I just recently, for the first time, watched Anna and the Apocalypse, which was really fun. Like, just the teen musical element, I thought, blended really well with the zombie comedy of it all. But yeah, those are three that I would point to as like totally different vibes. But another one is The Lodge, which is one of those where like I watched it once, I don't know if I'm going to watch it again because it genuinely unsettled me. I was like, this is very upsetting.
Goodness, I
remote
know.
yeah
I was like, yeah, I don't like going to the woods in general, but now I'm like, I'm good.
No need for that.
Just like after I wasn't big on Airbnbs before I watched Barbarian, but after that I was like, I'll pay for the hotel.
Yeah. It's worth it.
I'll do a hostel. I don't care.
Yeah.
Even though there is the movie Hostel, but yeah, most hostels are not like that.
No, it's much, much more pleasant experience usually.
Yeah. Are there any holiday horror movies that are a yearly rewatch for you?
Ooh, you know, it's not a holiday horror movie, but one movie that I revisit more often than any other is The Thing. And that's a very, you know, John Carpenter's Thing. It's a very like wintry isolation movie. So it feels like a holiday movie. And yeah, for some reason, that movie just never gets old to me. I find new things to appreciate in it every time.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Yeah, it's definitely a winter horror movie.
Yes.
Have you watched any of the newer holiday horror movies that have come out this year yet?
I was able in theaters to catch It's a Wonderful Night and listen to your interview with the filmmakers as well, which was such a treat. Like it was such a nice kind of mashup, of course, of like It's a Wonderful Life and a slasher, but also kind of Hallmark Christmas vibes. And I just really appreciate when folks are playing in those ways, in those kind of mashup ways to like take elements from this and put in some wonderful kind of queer romance in it as well, and just kind of make something totally new. Yeah, it was a fun one.
Yeah, I didn't expect the queer romance plot to come into it. So that was a very nice surprise.
Yeah.
Why do you think horror movies and books work so well with the backdrop of the holiday season?
I think the part of it is the contrast, right? Of like bright, colorful lights and festive cheer and happy, joyous energy with dark, dark violence. But at the same time, for me, like, especially in Candy Cane Kills, was exploring like, well, but also holidays are about like family drama and religious trauma. Like that for me are the sometimes part of the Christmas vibe. So it was like, it feels like it's not a big stretch to kind of go straight into a horror story from there.
Yeah, there's definitely some religious trauma in Candy Cane Kills.
Yeah, just
oh my
a little
goodness
bit.
Oh my god. Oh, thank god. Is there any holiday that you think they need to make a horror movie around?
Ooh, good question. I mean, it's already been done before, but like with My Bloody Valentine and then the Audie slasher Valentine. But I still, that might be my top choice of like, if I was going to do another holiday horror, that's the because I just think there's so much to explore in modern romance, right? Like traditions for Christmas and other holidays usually stay the same, but in terms of like dating and romance, like that's constantly evolving. So yeah, that'd be the one to.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's true. Somebody could be using a dating app to kill people.
Yeah. Yep.
So part of an old tradition of Christmas was reading ghost stories as like on Christmas Eve or something. Have you ever read any Christmas ghost stories on Christmas or before around Christmas?
Ooh, a good question. So I've read, I mean, yeah, like Christmas Carol being a classic, but then Peter Straub's Ghost Story, that's a great one that I love. And then I don't know if they're specifically kind of Christmas centric, but M.R. James is like, write some of my favorite ghost stories. I mean, in terms of like the old kind of Victorian vibes. But yeah, I think it's such an interesting, I just went to a Christmas party at a friend's and she recently discovered that in like the Victorian era, Christmas before Dickens's Christmas Story was published, Christmas was starting to kind of die out because there wasn't any clarity around like what the holiday was about. And so she found these like series of Victorian Christmas cards that are just so bizarre and have nothing to do with what we know Christmas to be. And so like her invitation for the party was a Victorian Christmas card of like a frog that had been stabbed through the heart with a sword and the other frog running away with a bag of loot. And it was just like that was a Christmas card in Victorian era. And I'm like, that is wonderful. We need to bring that back, whatever that is.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to Google that immediately after we hang up. That's incredible. Oh, maybe
And then
some.
it, yeah, Dickens told his story, and it was like, okay, we like commerce was able to like build around that. But before that, they were like, I don't know, frogs stabbing each other? Sure.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's hysterical. Maybe we need to bring some things back from the Victorian era.
Yeah,
Mostly not, but that we can bring back.
not like lockets filled with the hair of our dead children. We can probably leave that one behind. They did some
Yeah,
weird stuff.
it should be blood or hair or, ashes. Come on.
Yeah,
Let's be
maybe
reasonable.
a fingernail or two. Nothing weird.
A tooth. That'll degrade after a little while anyway. Thank you so much for being here. My last question is, if Candycane Kills is adapted into a movie, who is your dream person to play Austin?
Oh, that's so hard because I don't know enough young actors. I'm so old that the only one in my mind is Timothée Chalamet, and he's probably too old. But yeah, there is. I did already write the screenplay, and it's out to producers. But with the holidays coming, it's probably going to be a slow process. But that is definitely the dream to see this come alive, and a lot of readers have said that it feels like. When you're reading it, it feels like you're watching a movie. So hopefully we'll see Candy Cane on the big screen.
Oh, that's so exciting. Good luck with that. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So on social media, mostly these days, I'm still on Twitter for now. And then Instagram is where I think I'm most active and slowly getting onto Threads through that. And my handle on all of those is Brian McWriter. And my website as well is brianmcwriter.com. So yeah, feel free to connect with me there.
Awesome. And you have a couple of appearances coming up for your book. Do you want to talk about those?
Oh yes, thank you so much. So I will be in New Jersey, which is where I'm from, visiting my family. So Thunder Road Books in Spring Lake, New Jersey. I will be there on December 23rd at 11 a.m. So you can come out there and snag a copy of Candy Cane Kills, and I'll sign it, and we'll celebrate the horror days.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the holidays and seeing your family, and thank you again so much.
Thanks for having me, Allison. It's great to see you.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brian McCauley, and thanks again to Brian for coming on. Make sure to go pick up his new book, Candy Cane Kills, wherever you buy books, and I'll leave links to where you can buy the book and find Brian on socials in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. Don't forget to check out our Patreon if you want to stay more connected. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. I hope everyone who's celebrating has a great holiday. We'll be back with another episode next week, and until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.